This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn and Shaoning. It's 8:47 in the morning, Thursday the 9th of April. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be bringing you the KLCI opening numbers as well as some of the latest news out of corporate Malaysia. And we're also running a poll on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio. Because as COVID-19 takes its toll on businesses, should the pandemic be considered a reason for relief from contractual obligations? So we have had 130 votes so far. 63% have voted yes, 16% have voted no, 10% not yet, another 10% don't know. We've got a great comment on this from Aid 007, which is, I think my wife will leave me then, contract no longer valid.
Maybe it's because everyone's stuck at home together with cabin fever, right?
So, yes, I think so.
Yeah. Maybe everyone gets on their nerves a little bit.
Just a little bit more. But we're taking a look today also at the UK because we're looking at how it is responding to this COVID-19 pandemic. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is spending another night in intensive care, having been admitted on Sunday for worsening symptoms of COVID-19. Now, he's the first global leader known to be hospitalised after contracting the virus. There are a lot of questions over how this could impact the UK government's response to the pandemic.
Yeah, because the UK has already been under intense scrutiny for its perceived slow response to contain the outbreak, both locally and on the international front. Now, last month, Singapore was one country that accused the UK of being negligent in preventing the spread of COVID-19. So the question now is, how robust is the UK machinery in a crisis, especially when their PM is in ICU?
So for some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us this morning, Patrick Diamond, Associate Professor of Public Policy at the Queen Mary University of London. Thank you for joining us this morning, Patrick. So has the government's response to COVID-19 been affected by Prime Minister Boris Johnson's hospitalisation?
Okay, so there's been an ongoing concern for some weeks about the effectiveness of the UK government's response to the pandemic, but this has certainly been exacerbated by the illness and then the hospitalisation of the Prime Minister. I think for several reasons, this has increased people's concerns about the government's ability to cope with a pandemic. One reason is obviously who's in charge when the Prime Minister is ill. He has nominated the Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, as his designated figure leading the government while the Prime Minister is in hospital. But there's a lot of uncertainty about what powers Raab can actually exercise on behalf of the Prime Minister. There's many questions constitutionally about what kind of powers designated lead minister can actually exercise and what that means in terms of instructing civil servants, the police, other public officials, and so on.
And what complications do you foresee arising if the Prime Minister is indisposed for a lengthy period of time?
Well, in terms of the Prime Minister specifically, if he were to be hospitalised for a significant period, he would clearly have to step aside from the cabinet and another individual would, in that scenario, be asked to fulfil the function of Prime Minister for the period in which the current Prime Minister was not able to carry out his duties. In terms of the impact on managing the pandemic, I think the key issue that many people are obviously most concerned about is planning and preparing the exit strategy and putting in place the measures that are necessary for an exit strategy to be carried out. And clearly the concern is with the Prime Minister out of the picture, not running the government, who is going to be providing the overarching leadership around what the strategy is, and then also who's going to be ensuring that the necessary measures get delivered. So a crucial aspect of the exit strategy is about putting in place an effective testing and tracing infrastructure. Testing in the UK has been behind other countries, particularly Germany. The government has committed to upscaling testing so that by the end of April, there'll be 100,000 tests a day carried out. But this requires real drive from government. And obviously, with the Prime Minister in hospital, there's a lot of concern about where will the impetus for delivery be coming from. But also, you know, there's a question about who will decide when the current lockdown can end. And if the Prime Minister is out of the picture, who could be the designated individual with the authority to do that? So I think if Boris Johnson is going to have to endure a long stay in hospital, inevitably there will be a discussion about bringing in a replacement Prime Minister who can at least take over for a temporary period.
Now, Patrick, turning to the economic front, the UK government has been lauded for its strong fiscal response to mitigating the fallout from the outbreak. But the question is, how effective have the economic measures been so far?
Being seen as reasonably effective in the sense that the coverage of workers who are included in the measures is reasonably wide. So the government started off by providing, in effect, a wage compensation scheme for workers who were employed by large companies or by established businesses. And what it's done since then is to widen the coverage to include people who work as contractors or who have casualised contracts of one kind or another within at least some of those measures. So there is income support for a fairly wide group within the working age population. Alongside that, there's also been an effort to try to increase the generosity of benefits for people who may not be in work, but who may be suffering because of the impact of the pandemic. So the sense is that the wage compensation schemes, the benefit increases, the social supports which have been put in place have been reasonably effective. Obviously, what we don't know, and it's clearly too early to tell, but what looks more ominous is the overall effect of the pandemic on growth and on GDP, where the UK looks to be one of the most affected countries. It looks as if the developed economies, particularly the Western European economies like France, Germany, obviously the UK, are going to be particularly badly affected by this crisis.
And of course, all talk of Brexit has been superseded by COVID-19 now. How is the pandemic actually affecting Brexit trade negotiation process then?
Well, the pandemic's already affected the negotiations in the sense that the original proposal was that the trade talks would begin at the beginning of March, which many people thought even then was an extremely tight and probably unworkable timetable to get from early March to the end of this year and have some form of trade agreement in place. The pandemic clearly makes it close to impossible. The EU has talked about needing to postpone the talks. The British government has been somewhat more circumspect. It's reluctant to speak openly about the possibility that there may be some form of delay. But certainly, as long as the pandemic goes on, the severity of its effects, the impact on the economy, obviously the effect it has in terms of distracting ministers who would have been involved in the EU talks, it looks completely unworkable for the UK to imagine that it could have a deal in place by the end of December. And of course, there was concern that Brexit would inflict significant economic damage on the UK. If you look at what's already happened because of the pandemic, to go ahead with Brexit looks now like an even more risky and potentially dangerous move economically. So there's going to have to be some rethinking. How long should they delay for? What kind of transition should they seek with the EU? What's now feasible? I think that's, though, there is another question which arises from all of this, which is, in the post-pandemic climate, will it really be viewed as a good move for the UK to leave the European Union? There's bound to be some reconsideration of that question, but of course that's a long way off.
So before we let you go, Patrick, I mean, hypothetically, would the UK have been better positioned to tackle the pandemic if it had remained in the EU?
The concerns about the ability of the UK to fight back against the pandemic are, at the moment at least, largely to do with the funding of the National Health Service, of the national healthcare system. And certainly over the last decade, the impact of cuts in the NHS has meant that, for example, there are fewer intensive care beds, fewer ventilators, less protective equipment for staff. Those concerns are obviously not directly to do at all with Britain's membership and then leaving the European Union. So in that sense, the EU does not figure very highly so far in debates about why UK's response may have been relatively weak compared to other countries. But there are other issues which are obviously going to surface. I mean, one specific issue is to do with the procurement of ventilators at the EU level, where there has been a concerted, coordinated effort by EU member states to purchase and distribute ventilators between different member states according to their needs. The UK has not participated in this because obviously it would views itself now as a non-EU member, even though it was actually technically able to do so. So I think there's a sense that by distancing the UK from Europe, this may have impacted directly on the ability of the government to coordinate efforts to tackle the pandemic. But beyond that, obviously, for the UK, even though it's outside the EU, the EU member states are the countries which are closest to it. And many people will question it after this pandemic. Can we effectively fight back against risks and disasters like global pandemics by not engaging in the kind of political structures and coordination mechanisms that the EU provides? So I think the debate about whether the UK's distancing from the EU has undermined its efforts to tackle the pandemic will certainly resurface in the future.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Patrick. That was Patrick Diamond, Associate Professor of Public Policy at the Queen Mary University of London. And I think the conversation that we had there at the end on Brexit is interesting. Amidst all of this COVID-19 palaver, I think everyone's a little bit forgotten that the UK was supposed to have a trade deal negotiated by the end of this year with the EU. But when their top negotiators and the top decision maker is in ICU, clearly all of that has to be put on hold for a bit.
Yeah, I think the priority is running the country, right? I mean, governing the country, making sure that everything, the country responds to the economic crisis and also to the health crisis, because we do know that the NHS is extremely stretched at this moment in UK. There are not enough beds, not enough ventilators. But I also listened to this conversation with Theresa May, who was the ex-Prime Minister, who reminded the UK nationals or citizens that UK is still a cabinet-run country, mm-hmm. right? So powers are not just held by Boris Johnson, but each minister has their own responsibility. And also added to that, there is a very good civil service which makes sure that the country still runs. But the point is, if Boris Johnson is sick for too long a time, there does need to be decisions that need to be made. And then the question is, who makes these decisions? Because guess what? UK has an unwritten constitution. So it's also not really clarified.
Lots of questions are still remaining over the situation there in the UK. But right now we are about to head into the 9 o'clock news bulletin. And up next, we're taking a look at the KLCI opening numbers as well as some corporate news. So stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.